Hello and welcome to the Sydney Institute podcast. The Institute is Australia's premier current affairs forum. Every week, contemporary political, social, cultural and economic issues are explored at the Institute through dialogue and discussion. This podcast was recorded recently at a members' forum in the city of Sydney. Thanks for listening, and for more information about the Sydney Institute, please visit www.thesydneyinstitute.com.au. We hope you enjoy this event.
It's great to have Christopher Hill back at the Sydney Institute. He was here last year and we had to do it on a Sunday, and now we're doing it on a Tuesday lunchtime. So I'll introduce him briefly. Assistant Secretary of State for East Asian and Pacific Affairs since early 2005. He was Ambassador of Poland to the Republic of Macedonia, Special Envoy to Kosovo. He received the Distinguished Service Award from the US State Department for his role in the US negotiating team in Bosnia, in the Bosnian peace settlement, and was also acknowledged for his role in the Kosovo crisis, and of course has been head of the US delegation to the six-party talks on North Korea, on the North Korean nuclear issue. Anne and I very much value Mr. Hill's friendship and his willingness to address the City Institute. I should also say a special welcome to the Ambassador and Mimi McCallum. So off we go, and the designated topic we had is the United States and the Asia Pacific, but our speaker may have something to say about that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Stuart. No, I was just thinking, look, this is actually the second time I've been here at the Sydney Institute, and I remember I really enjoyed the interaction with the audience, and I've got this really excellent speech, which I didn't write, but it really covers everything, and it goes on for 21 pages. But I just thought what we could do is I can give this to Jared. This would get published, and then you all could pretend you heard it. And then I could just talk to you and sort of tell you where we are right now, in the six-party process. It is kind of an important week, and I'll explain why. What we're trying to do, where we're trying to go with it, what we might try to do to sort of broaden the six-party process and get into some of the architectural issues in Asia. Then we go to questions, and I'll be standing here talking to you like a human being rather than reading a speech. So is that a deal? Can we do that?
Okay, so
there's my speech.
So this will be published in the Sydney papers.
Okay, well, great. So I don't have to read anything. That's terrific. Anyway, it is great to be back here. Last time I was here, I think I was also on the way to the forum. So funny things happen once again on the way to the forum. I've stopped at the Sydney Institute. But it is great to have Ambassador Mrs. McCallum here. Very proud of our ambassador here. And in fact, I was just with our ambassador in Honolulu, where we had a chief of missions conference, and we had the opportunity, we try to sort of work very closely with our Navy, which has such an important role to play, the Pacific Command in Pacific and in Asia. And during that time, actually, while we were discussing all the things that one discusses at an ambassador's seminar, we had the opportunity to go out to the Arizona Memorial and to see some of the most touching scenes of U.S. involvement in the Pacific, and it certainly recalls tragic history, but nonetheless a very important history, and an important history that we've shared together with Australians. So I think it's on the way to the forum, I'm so pleased that I've been able to stop here in Sydney and to talk to you a little about some of the issues in Asia. Then I go on to Tonga. I never thought I'd ever see Tonga in my life, and I may never see it again, but I am going to see it this week, and we are going to sit down with these Pacific Island states and try to deal with some tough issues that they're dealing with. And what is very important for us is the U.S., is that we have countries like Australia with us together as we try to plot a better future for some of these countries. So let me start with where we are in the Korean talks and where we hope to be at the end of the year and where we hope to be after that. This is really an important week because as I speak to you, we have eight Americans who are there pursuant to the six-party agreement last week, talking to the North Koreans about the very difficult process of beginning to dismantle their nuclear facilities in Yongbyon. I think you know Yongbyon is where they have this graphite moderated reactor, not to be confused with Yongpyeong in South Korea where they have a ski resort. Yongbyon is where they have really five major sites, and all of them are going to be disturbed by the asymmetry of this. Can we go like that or something? One's longer than the other, but I feel it should be something like that.
One's a light.
Okay. What is? Oh, this is a light?
Yeah.
Oh, forget it. All right. So, in Yongbyon, what we agreed to do after a great deal of effort was to get the North Koreans to agree that not only will they shut down the facilities in Yongbyon, but now we're going to actually disable them, meaning that if they wanted to reverse it, it would be tough to do. They would have to they would have to fill a pretty large repair bill, and it wouldn't be easy. Now, of course, disabling it is not the end of the road, but I think it's an important milestone because it signals to the North Koreans that we're not going back here. We've shut it down. We've already got a sort of political disablement, meaning that if they wanted to reverse it now, they'd have to kick out the international inspectors and ignore the six-party agreement last spring that got us the shutdown. But this new phase is that in addition to having to kick out international inspectors and ignoring agreements that have been reached, including with China, they would have to start repairing the thing as well. So it's a very important moment for us to see whether we can actually disable this thing in a way that allows us to go forward to have North Korea make the psychological break with this nuclear reactor and understand that we'll continue until there's denuclearization. So the team is now looking at their five facilities. One is a sort of a futuristic idea that the North Koreans have to produce a 200 megawatt reactor. Fortunately, that is not very far along, so we're not going to have to do too much to that. The same with a 50 megawatt reactor that the North Koreans began to build, but still have a long way to go. And then there are three other facilities that we really want to disable. One is the facility that prepares the fuel that goes into the reactor. That's called the fuel fabrication plant. And then where they put the fuel, that's the actual 5-megawatt reactor. And then when you take the spent fuel from the reactor and put it in something called a reprocessing facility, that's where you actually separate from the spent fuel rods the actual plutonium. So they've agreed to disable all of these. Now, how do you disable? You know, you can, if you were to disable a car, I mean, take the battery out of the car, but if you just put the battery on the sidewalk next to the car, anytime you want to restart the car, although the car is disabled, you could just put the battery back in and you're back in business. Unless that's the only battery in town, or unless maybe you broke that battery and that there's no other battery you could put back into that car. So we're looking at kind of solutions like that. We have been talking to the North Koreans about making sure, for example, that there is no fuel to put back in the reactor. That would be very helpful. So we're in the middle of those negotiations, but I think it's pretty clear that we will come out with something which will make it very difficult to restart the thing. The second thing our team is doing is having some extensive talks about the question of uranium enrichment. Now, if you recall, the U.S. spotted, and I think we were pretty accurate in spotting it, but the North Koreans made some purchases which were entirely consistent with a uranium enrichment program. So that gave rise to the concern, well, you stopped their plutonium program, you shut the front door, but what about the back door where they're making all the uranium enriched uranium? And by the way, the trouble with enriched uranium is you can make it underground in some tunnel and we'll never know about it. So following the purchases of equipment for uranium enrichment is very important, because they may end up producing uranium enrichment and you'll never see it. So we have had a lot of discussions with the North Koreans, such that, without going into too many details in this public forum, I think by the end of the year we have good reason to believe that whatever uranium enrichment program they have going, they will not have going by the end of the year. So that's shut down the plutonium program, eliminate the uranium enrichment issue, and thirdly, get from the North Koreans a full list of all of their nuclear programs. Now, the reactor, et cetera, is the main issue, but of course they can, the uranium enrichment is another issue, but of course there are other nuclear experiments they're doing and things like that, so we need to have a pretty complete catalog, and what the North Koreans have agreed to provide this. So, it is, so we have, I think, good reason to believe that by the beginning of the new year, 08, we will have a problem in North Korea that is reduced to the presence of 50 kilos of separated plutonium, that is plutonium that was already produced from this 5-megawatt reactor in Yongbyon. And then the issue will be to get this 50 kilos, which will not become 100 kilos because we will have the plutonium reactor shut down and sealed and disabled. But so it's a 50 kilo problem, not a growing problem. But nonetheless, we need to get the North Koreans to agree to surrender this, or I won't use the word surrender in front of them, to abandon this 50 kilos. That's going to be the toughest sell. And I think to some extent, it reflects the fact that at every level of this, every level gets more difficult than the previous level. Obviously, getting a disabling your facilities is a more difficult step than just turning off the facilities, which was the earlier step. But I think as we get closer to the end, I think we begin to see the finish line, and I think the Chinese in particular begin to see the finish line. And what I've seen from the Chinese in recent months is a really stepped-up effort to try to work with them and get through to the end of this. So that's a very good sign. Whereas 2 years ago, the Chinese were inclined to say to the Americans, look, why don't you and North Koreans sit down and work out this problem of yours? Now, increasingly, I think the Chinese have understood this to be an endeavor of the six parties, not just of the two. And so I think to some extent that has really validated the whole concept of having a multilateral approach to what really should be a multilateral issue, because nuclear weapons in North Korea are not just an American problem, they're a problem for everybody. They're especially a problem for Japan. And so as we've gone forward, it's been very important to try to get Japan sort of into the game, and I have reason to believe that that is beginning, in fact, to happen. So as we approach the coming year, we need a strategy for getting the North Koreans to give up these last 50 kilos. As I said, it's going to be tough. We're going to have to convince the North Koreans that they need to understand that we will not normalize with North Korea. We will not see their way into international organizations. There will be limits to the kinds of economic assistance we can all provide, unless they make the decision to finally do away with these with this 50 kilos. So at the same time, the North Koreans who really like money, I mean, I must tell you, they are always interested in getting paid for things. And so I think it'll be a very tough bargain, but at the same time, I think we have a potential of getting through it. If we do get to this point where we're down to 50 kilos, one thing we've agreed to start with them is a peace process on the Korean Peninsula. Now, there is peace in the Korean Peninsula. It's governed by an armistice. What we would like is a peace process that replaces the armistice and becomes a peace treaty. This is something we would do through a process of negotiation. But if the North Koreans are truly worried about our quote-unquote hostile policy to them, although I try to emphasize to them it is not a hostile policy to them, it's to their nuclear weapons, I think we would be able to to reach a peace treaty that would demonstrate, first of all, North Korea would be accepted as a part of the landscape on the Korean Peninsula. The DMZ, that if you've ever been to South Korea, you know what the DMZ looks like, one of the most heavily fortified spots in the world, would be replaced as an international border. I think there'd be a lot in it for North Korea. And then finally, what we would also be prepared to start is something called the Northeast Asia Peace and Security Mechanism, where we would begin the process of creating a multilateral organization that, from North Korea's point of view, I think would allow them to become a membership in a regional organization where not every problem needs to be solved bilaterally, where age-old issues, whether issues stemming from history or economic disputes or whatever, could come through a Northeast Asia peace and security mechanism. So I think it would be of great interest to the North Koreans should they want to go that route. Ultimately, it is not clear what the North Koreans really want to do. They are one of the most isolated countries in the world. I mean, to see the North Koreans behave, for example, and we have an initial working group of the peace and security mechanism, and first they criticized the U.S., they took their turn around the table, criticized the U.S., well, I wasn't surprised about that, and then they criticized Japan, and I was certainly not surprised about that. And then, as I was reaching for the sports page, they started criticizing China, and that was kind of interesting. And they criticized Russia as well, accusing China and Russia of an arms race in the region. And, well, they ran out of time before they criticized the South Koreans. But it really goes to show that this is a country that is truly isolated, and they really do not have an understanding that security derives not from weapons you can produce, but rather from relationships you can create. So it will be a difficult process to convince them that there is a role for them in collective security, and that in this collective security, they can gain security in a way that their army, no matter how big they make it, will never be as big as the Chinese army or the Russian army or the U.S. or Japan or South Korea. They need to achieve security through relationships in the region. So as we move to do that, what I would hope is that this Northeast Asia Peace and Security Mechanism would prosper. We would develop a certain set of principles that we would try to set out for it. And I would hope that the rest of Asia Pacific would take notice, that we would get some countries joining in it. We don't want to keep it to just six members. We'd want to increase it to include other countries interested in security in Northeast Asia. I hope to some extent it would be a catalyst to some of the organizations that have developed and really gone forward in Southeast Asia, ASEAN being one of the main ones. But it would serve, I think, to as a there would be a sort of synergism between organizations, and that we would see an ASEAN that would be more inclined to do more and to try to develop greater sense of dispute mechanisms and things like that. And before you know it, we would have an Asia that really has some multilateral institutions worthy of the name, because currently, I think in Asia, there's not enough development of multilateralism. I think it has to do with, if you compare it to Europe, where Europe has been successful in developing these organizations based on sort of horizontal, if you will, lines of authority. In Asia, I think there's much too much of an emphasis on hierarchy. And I think in particular that emphasis on hierarchy has run into problems as China and Japan have sort of questioned who's going to be up, who's going to be number one, and who's going to be number two. I think Asia needs a little stronger horizontal movement rather than just this vertical concentration on hierarchy. So I think there would be much to be gained through that. As for North Korea's future, to be sure, it is a very troubled country. When you look at the fact that it has environmental degradation of the sort that is simply frightening, when you look at the fact that every time there's too much rain, the rainfall comes off these treeless hills now, and that they have many problems with floods just caused by, albeit heavy rainfall, but not ones that should be causing such extreme property and damage and loss of life. So I think from North Korea's vantage point, they need to do something. Certainly there's an attitude in North Korea that somehow they need to stay isolated, but I think there's an understanding that in continued isolation they will not survive, and yet I think they're very much afraid to open up, because if they open up too much, they fear also whether they can survive the light of day. So I think North Korea tries to really move through a very narrow middle ground, and I think increasingly it's going to be difficult for them, and increasingly they're going to have to make the decision to open up to the rest of the world. So North Korea is really a country that certainly whose nuclear ambitions have been a great challenge to us, but I think in meeting those challenges we can actually create a better Northeast Asian landscape. We can create better relations between, say, China and Japan, because throughout this whole process, as we've had so many difficulties in the Japan-China relationship, they've actually worked pretty well in the six-party process, and we have the North Koreans to thank for that. I think, to be sure, the North Korean nuclear issue has made great challenges for the U.S.-South Korean relationship. And yet I think we've met those challenges, and I think our relationship with South Korea is stronger as a result. I think we have been busy modernizing that relationship, and we would not have been able to do this if we didn't have the challenge of facing the North Korean nuclear issue. And so I think, ironically, this very difficult challenge, you know, often one rises, it's in the life of an individual, one must rise to an occasion, and I think that's also true in the life of nations, that one has to rise to the occasion. And I think many of the countries have done so, and I think as a result we will have a stronger Asia. We look forward to having other countries, as I've said, join in this. Australia, for example, has a great interest in the success of Northeast Asia, a great interest in seeing Northeast Asia live up to its potential. And so we would look to bring in countries like Australia and to increase not only our consultations with the Australians, which is always ongoing, but also have this peace and security, this Northeast Asian peace and security mechanism include countries like Australia. So it's it is very much an ongoing process. We have, as I said, we have a team there this week. We'll have another team next week. We'll look to have another meeting of the six-party process probably within another month. We will try to get through the end of this year and get all these tasks accomplished and see how we can do by the beginning of next year. So with those sort of opening comments, why don't we go to some questions?
Many thanks.
So a lot of people here, we don't have a lot of time.
You have been listening to the Sydney Institute podcast. This podcast is proudly brought to you through the support of Microsoft Australia. We hope you enjoyed listening and can join us again soon.